Now Probert, he's loose with the right hand, and he starts to retaliate, and down goes Nyland, and the two of them are hammering each other.
Knights of Columbus, that hurt!
It's old time hockey, the way you're supposed to play. You throw a little lumber if a guy gets in your way. You play like Gordie Howe or Eddie fucking Shore. We can't all be Gretzky's, the loser Bobby Orr's. Hey.
The enforcer of all hockey podcasts. It's the Biscuit. It's the Biscuit.
Damn it! That goal regulation size of one!
The enforcer of all hockey podcasts.
God help the fucking day if fighting's ever banned. As a country will stop working on some badness fucking can.
Hi, everybody. It's the Biscuit Podcast.
Hey, you wanna go? Yeah, okay. Good luck, man. Good luck to you too, buddy.
All right, Biscuit Babies, today I'm joined by the one, the only, Cam Jansen, American, former Devil, former Blues, former Nottingham Panther, 325 fights. Holy shit, dude. Cam, how you doing?
Doing good, man. Just enjoying this lovely 70-degree weather I have in Eureka, Missouri right now, which is pretty bizarre. More like 65, but it feels like 70. So I'm just hanging out, man, doing my thing.
Well, that's not bad, man. It's like 39 here and raining, so it's like not even the best parts of it being cold.
Well, I'm just waiting for a tornado siren to go off like we had last week. So very bizarre stuff, but I absolutely love it.
Do you guys get a lot of tornadoes out there?
Oh, hell yeah. Oh, big time, man. I'm infatuated with them for some odd reason. They're like the scariest thing in the world, but I'm the kind of guy that would jump in my truck and go chase it around. And those guys usually don't last too long.
Yeah, I'm going to need to see that. That should be a whole Netflix series, Cam Jansen, the Tornado Chaser, man.
I know. My girl doesn't like it. But that's the Midwest for you.
So you've seen, like, funnel clouds touch the ground like a full-blown tornado?
Oh, God, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, no, just every spring it's something new, you know what I mean? So, I mean, you know, I haven't seen, you know, an EF4 cruising around. You see the funnel clouds left and right, and they're all over the place. And, you know, they come and go, and sometimes we get smoked in February. Sometimes most of the time it's in the springtime, but maybe late summer we'll get it. Very, very bizarre weather. But, again, I love tornadoes. They're so interesting to me.
Dude, you're a wild.
Yeah, I can't argue with that.
Is that something that happened like as a kid, or is it something that you've gotten into more now?
I think the movie Twister helped.
Oh man!
And then a couple of these monsters that hit us, like in Joplin and Moore, Oklahoma. And then you go on YouTube and you just look them up. And you know, when you're playing hockey your whole life, you have a lot of downtime. So I get into these little fixes, these little like 6 to 8 month kind of fixes where I get really into something, you know, and read up all about it and on to another thing. But tornadoes is always something that, again, really just fascinating.
Yeah, the reason I asked, I was wondering if, like, maybe it was after you retired, you know, a couple years ago, like, you're not having to look down the barrel at McGrattan and Bonvie anymore. So you're like, well, I'll just go chase down tornadoes.
Well, I have my own radio show, so, you know, you could talk sports all you want, but it's sometimes people like to hear what's kind of just on your mind.
For sure.
And my mind goes all over the place. So, I have to be creative too. So if you listen to other, you know, podcasts, like I talk hockey nonstop, but sometimes it's interesting just to get into something that maybe you grew up doing, or maybe just has nothing to do with hockey. And you're just like, holy cow, this tornado just kind of hit us. And people are just extremely interested in it because of how fascinating they are.
Oh, 100%, man. That's the most favorite part of the podcast for me is talking to you guys, and not even necessarily talking hockey. Like shit, I didn't know Cam Jansen was into tornadoes. That made my whole day. Like that's the gold. That's the stuff that people really, I think, can clinch on to and be like, oh, you know, he's just a, you're not just a dude, but I mean, and at the end of the day, you're going to bed just like everyone else.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, a lot of guys have their own little thing going, but weather and animals, and I mean, there's a long list of stuff that I like besides hockey. Don't get me wrong, hockey's just my life, and it has been pretty much my whole life, and it kind of still is now because of we all have to talk about it, and we all have to be on our game. So, like, yeah, I catch myself last night. Well, how about this? I'll start over. When I'm playing, I was more into so many other things, and now that I'm retired, I'm more into hockey than probably I've ever been, even when I played.
Interesting.
Because I have to dissect the game and know the different parts and this and that. Well, when you're just playing, and then you're thinking about partying after, and you're thinking about, you know, hanging out with girls or whatever the case
is. Yeah, anything else but hockey, yeah.
Anything else, man, video games, I mean, shit, it does, anything. But now it's like hockey's pretty much everything because I get quizzed on it every single day. And, you know, just because you play doesn't mean you know what the fuck's going on. You got to really be up to date on what's up, you know, what happened last night, what Patrick Laine do, da, 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 da. So I just find myself watching more hockey now than I've ever had in my life. And I look back on it like, man, maybe I should have been more a student of the game when I played, or maybe it would have worn me out. I don't know. But right now, it's hockey's everything.
Well, there's always those serial killer guys like Sidney Crosby who, like, his hobby is watching hockey film. I mean, at one point, like, you got to kind of live a little bit. So I think more guys are on that side of you than, like, the few guys who, you know, Wayne Gretzky and Sidney Crosby who sit there and draw circles on their pieces of paper while they watch hockey, like, to see where the puck's going. I think that's more of a abnormality than anything.
Yeah, well, that might be why they're the best.
Right, yeah, but I mean, exactly.
I also wanted to... You know, you're so selfish when you're caught up in the time when you're playing. You're just like, it's all about me. And you're, you know, especially when you're playing at home, you're just like, where am I going to take my buddies after this? Or I'm going to go put on a show because I have, you know,
I'm a baller.
My buddies brought a bunch of girls there and we're going to take them all out. You know, just like, you know, you want to take care of your buddy, whatever the case. It's just, it's not, for me, it's just, there's just so much else to it. And you're just going out there and playing, and then you got all the stuff afterwards. And maybe that was some of my demise, and maybe not. But I look at it how I dissect again the game, and I rewind the film, and this and that now because I really have to talk about it in such a detailed way that you have to do your homework on it, and you have to be up to date, and you just kind of. It just consumes your life more than it ever has, well, besides playing it every day.
Well, that's absolutely why you're one of the best commentators, though, too, because you've been through it and done it. I mean, I can talk hockey all I want, but I never played in the NHL, so it's like, you know, how much are you going to believe what I have to say, you know?
Well, that goes with, no, I noticed that, too, but you know, there's so many guys that you don't have to necessarily play to be a student of the game. And my gosh, you know, Ken Hitchcock and Babcock. I don't know if Babcock played or not, but I could be wrong on that. But there's a lot of coaches that just know their stuff because they love the game and they
great
can,
point.
You know, they can. But if I ask you, guy, what's it like getting caught out there for 2 minutes when you got straight legs and how do you get that puck out? Well, it's going to be tough for you to be like, well, when I was out there, God, I used to have to do this on the wall to get my, or whatever the case is. Now I get that point. But, you still, man, I see these guys I work with now at the radio station and things like that. They know their stuff, man. They do. They know their stuff. They're hard to be. They're not stumped. They do their homework. They study the game. They watch the superstars, and you know, they make me look foolish sometimes for sure.
And, well, in this era of media too, it's a lot easier for somebody who didn't play professional sports to study the game. Because
exactly.
It's everywhere. I mean, if I want, man. I can watch hockey all day.
Man, I'll tell you this. I got my news sources I look up, and they're just, you know, it's funny. Like, of course, I watch the NHL Network all damn day. Fine, okay, whatever. You know, Weeksy and all those guys, Michael Rupp on there that I play with, and they're all good guys. They know. But sometimes I go online, I watch this guy on YouTube that just goes through, and he just has his whiteboard behind him, and he goes through all, like, the worst.
I know that guy.
You know what I'm talking about?
I know that guy.
Oh, he's just a normal guy, just a huge Canadian hockey fan.
Yep.
And he's just I just watch, it's so damn interesting, and he goes through all the different things of back in the day, the worst first picks overall, and this and that, I don't know, just like little things like that, I just find myself putting me to sleep at night, and it's so damn interesting, and I just always look at it like, God, that would take me forever to put that list together, all that work.
Well,
I'm glad that you do that for me. Thank you, sir.
Yeah,
you know?
If he's listening, he knows who he is. He's the whiteboard guy. I absolutely know who he is, for sure.
Yeah, I got plenty of those guys, though, man. You just got to find them.
But,
and it's just interesting.
Yeah, for sure. And the great thing about that, too, is as much as I like, you know, watching the NHL Network and Center Ice and everything, it's, you know, Kevin Weeksy can only say so much in a half-hour show. He's not given the opportunity to just go off the cuff. Or even, I mean, he has to even mind his P's and Q's.
Oh,
you know,
hell yeah.
Exactly. So it's good to have shows you know, not to toot my own horn like the Biscuit or even Spit and Chicklets or, you know, Fourth Line Voices show where guys can say whatever they want for three hours if I feel like it.
And well, with Biz and the guys, Biz Nasty and Wit and all those guys, like, they have to kind of toe it a little bit.
Yeah, they do. I've noticed that more lately than earlier.
But they don't, though. They do and they don't.
Right.
Like, you know, like, obviously, Paul, he's working for Arizona, but, I mean, what are they going to do? They're going to fire him?
He's right.
Got millions? Like, come on. Like, unless he says something that's unbelievably controversial or something, you know. Sometimes you get put out of context. Trust me on that. So maybe something really fell down on him, and the whole world was against him. Like, this kind of happens sometimes, and you're like, "Whoa, what the? Oh, I didn't mean like that. My bad." Like, then maybe, but boy, he's built his brand up so much to where if he keeps doing what he's doing, he could be himself.
He's brilliant,
and he could go on the edge a little bit and be okay because of his status.
100%. He's the most popular Coyotes player, and he doesn't play. Like, that's how good he's doing.
Oh, yeah, he might be one of the most popular guys in the NHL.
Right.
And he's not playing, seriously.
100%.
He worked his ass off. He was goofy when he did his Twitter stuff. And I remember looking back at that, dude. And I had to get off of Twitter because of Lou Lamoriello and the Devils. And I'm looking at what Biz was saying. And I'm like, God, I thought it was goofy at the time.
Right.
But now that I'm in this business, I look back and I'm like, damn, I should have stuck with it and just been myself on there and built this thing up. Yeah, I would have gone through some weird times with it, and but man, after hockey, you could really use it, for job sources and all kinds of people want to hire you because you have a voice that reaches a lot of people.
Well, I mean, as far as Biz Nasty, you're right up there, man. As far as personalities go, there's guys that have personality like yourself and Biz Nasty, and then sports commentators. You know, there's a complete difference of
robots.
Yeah, where I'm like, oh, okay, you could just fucking plug anybody into this job.
I know.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, no doubt. And you're right. And you got to take advantage of your personality as well.
And it sucks that, like, you know, I know Lou Lamoriello doesn't like long hair, doesn't like facial hair, doesn't like the social media, but you have to kind of realize that that things are turning a different way, and there's a way for you guys to reach people in a different way, and it seems foolish to not embrace it a little bit. Like, oh, you guys can't tweet? Come on, man. What are you talking about?
Yeah, but look, I get where Lou was coming from, though, man. Like, the last thing he wants to do is have somebody tweet something stupid out, and then he's got to put the fire out.
Yeah.
Look, social media is trouble when you're playing. It's fine when you're not playing because you can use it, whatever. But
yep.
I completely understood where Lou came from with that. I did, and that's why I'm like, man, I get it. But on the other hand, you know, I wasn't thinking about radio after hockey at the time. And if I was, I would have just kind of squeaked by and did my thing. I was worried about what the hell he was thinking of me at the time,
right,
as I should. And, you know, I was his guy, and I needed to mind my P's and Q's and do my thing. Because I was always on the bubble, and he loved my energy and my passion and all that. He brought me back, and, you know, I went through some weird times, and he helped me, and whatever the case was. But if he doesn't want me to be on Twitter and he wants me to untuck my jersey, well, I'm going to do that. You
know what I mean? That's a great point, Cam, especially, I mean, that's your job, that's your livelihood. So at the end of the day, I mean, do I really love Twitter that much? No. So
No, I don't. No, I'm not even great on it either. I feel every time I tweet something out, I have to look at it for 45 minutes to make sure I didn't misspell something. Then I'll tweet it, and then I'll look back. And never mind what I said or what I meant to say. It's what the word I misspelled or misused.
Oh.
Like, how did I not pick up on that? I ruined my whole tweet.
Oh, I have done your wrong so many times that I have, like, probably the world record on the Twitter for doing the wrong your.
Yeah, oh man, I trust me, so stupid.
But
so
even, it literally doesn't matter either, because look at guys, you know, like the aforementioned Sidney Crosby, who doesn't tweet at all.
Yeah, he does. Well, he's never going to have, look, you think he's going to need his Twitter afterwards?
No.
He's going to own, like, he's in a different echelon, okay? Let's be honest with ourselves.
For sure.
But us mutts on the fourth line, you know, like, we're going to have to grind it, and we're going to have to grind it afterwards. I didn't make $60 million. I, you know, like, I worked my ass off, I did my thing. I built a brand up in St. Louis, a big one, and I'm taking advantage of it. But, you know, I had to grind through it, and I had to work, you know, my retirement was somewhat graceful. You know, I signed two more years over in Nottingham, and a week before training camp, and you know, the fans over there were going, "We just won two championships," and they're just, you know, I worked my ass off for them out there, and we had just such a memorable year, and you know, I just embraced Nottingham, and I fought, and I just, you know, I played the game, you know, I went to the crowd, and I signed, I did anything they wanted me to do, and I signed, so they were so excited about me coming over. And then ESPN Radio and then 5-9 The Fan here offered me a contract, and I had to take it. So I just at the last second just decided I was going to retire, and I'm kind of glad I did, man, because I think if I would have gone back over there, I probably would have had to fight 25 times because they brought over like 15 heavyweights, yeah. You know, Bartolo and all these guys, yeah. You know, after I ran to that.
They sure
so
did.
I'm like, holy shit. I'm like, okay, thank God that I was able to have some job offers,
yeah,
and got a job. So most people, it takes a long time for them to know what they want to do, but it fell into my lap pretty easily.
Yeah, the rest of the league, I think, went, okay, Cam Jansen's getting 120 pins the last year, winning the, like, we got to do something here.
They brought, oh my God, I mean, I would have been so damn busy, man, but I got out in time, my head's okay.
Good, you that's know, good, I'm glad to hear that, man.
Yeah, so pretty cool.
And the show you speak of is the Cam Jansen Show, Monday through Thursday, 6 to 7 p.m., and Friday from 2 to 4 on 590 The Fan in St. Louis?
Yeah, in St. Louis. I'm on every single day, and I work with other radio stations, too, and it's actually pretty abnormal to do that with another competitor. But I work for KMOX as well, who's the voice of the St. Louis Blues, so I do my podcast with them every game day, and then the Blues hire me to do stuff. So you're just like a revolving door. You just, boom, I got my show, and I get hired to do this, and I get hired to speak here, and the Blues want me to do that, and da, 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 da. So it's a busy lifestyle, but it's fun. You're always in this, you know, like when you're in the scene, and I loved being in the scene here, man, in your hometown. Like, I loved it, you know, like, I love attention. I do. I'm not going to lie to you. Like, of course, I love fighting and skating to the penalty box and seeing all the fans and, like, you know, taking my shirt off in the box, like, yeah, baby. Hell yeah, fucking it. I loved it. And, you know, like, I loved that. Some people don't. They just do it because, hey, it's my job. Well, I fucking love that. And now then the radio is kind of this, I get that same feeling afterwards. You know, I'm doing these events. You're still relevant. And I like that. So, again, it fits my mold extremely well.
Well, that's funny. That's a question I had for you is, did you always enjoy enforcing it? And it sounds like, And this is from a third party here, me watching you, you know, growing up going, oh, this guy likes this. This guy, it bleeds over and the fans are going, oh, this guy's fucking awesome. Like, because you can tell there's guys who fought and did it because they knew they were good at it or they knew that they could make a career out of it. And then there's other guys who did it and liked it.
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. There's a big difference. And if you... I mean, you can go on YouTube, and I always refer back to YouTube because it documented my whole career. And I'm lucky I went through that era where YouTube was there. So anybody that wants to look up what you did, they can. You know, 90% of my fights are on there if you dig into them. You know, even the junior ones. And if you look back at when I'm playing as a young kid, fighting these older guys when I was playing for the Sting, and, you know, 16 years old fighting 21-year-olds, and I didn't just do it because, this is going to be my chance to make it. No, I'm like, all right, I got people in the stands. Like, I'm going to let this out, man. Let's go. I'll go you. You're supposed to beat me up. I'll go you. And then you get your confidence. And I beat up a 21-year-old, and then I go to high school the next day, and I got a cut over my eye. I get all this attention, and I'm like, yeah, I'm a badass. Yeah, okay. Now I know. Now I can kind of form my personality into something, you know? And hockey gave me that avenue to where I could be like, all right, I'm crazy. You know, I know. My parent, I got great genes. I'm athletic. I'm big. Like, just play hockey and take that personality of yours and form it into something. And I know it sounds kind of bizarre, but I did that and I embraced it and I loved it. And when the fighting came, I got a kick out of it. Now, I will tell you, you know, going to bed the night before and pregame naps,
yes,
thinking about fighting McGrath and Colton Orr and, you know, even juniors, I got to fight Jake Gilmore. And I wasn't scared. Like, oh, I was worried about being embarrassed more than anything. And Bob Probert said that same thing when he was interviewed. It's not about somebody, yeah, I'm worried about getting knocked out, but I'm worried about getting knocked out because I got my buddy's in the stands, my parents are over there, I got a girlfriend in there, I got this or that. I'm embarrassed. And so it's just a different mindset. So, like, the night before in a pregame skate, I was like, oh, God, okay, Cam, who's you're going to do? Okay, you're going to do it. But once I got on the ice, I'm like, fuck everything. Let's go, baby. I don't give a shit. Let's go. That kind of attitude. It's really weird. It's like a light switch, man. But then afterwards, you're like, whoo, yeah. It's like a euphoric high that you can't recreate, man.
Dude, that... Man, you're wild, dude. I love you. You're awesome, dude. That whole segment right there, that's the shit people want to hear, man. Because it makes it more fun. I mean, it just does, and it is entertainment at some point. So it is good to hear that, like, there's guys like you and McGrant who just loved it. Just loved the whole everything about the gig, man.
And yeah, absolutely.
Even that kind of tension before the fight, it probably made you guys better at doing it.
Oh, God, well, yeah, you got to have a style.
The awe stress or whatever it would be, that kind of anxiety, that build-up, like, it's like a fucking bomb.
Yeah, man, no, like, you have to build up that, not in rage, but that just that fire in you to let it out, but you can't be crazy, but you have to have a style, too. Like, I can't go into McGrath and just trade with him. The guy's got me by 7 inches, so he's going to go right down the pipe and he's going to catch me in the butt and then I'm going to look like an idiot. So get in there, take some off the back of the head, take some off, let him graze you, make sure you get your grip, you know, get your breath. It might be 30, 40 seconds into the fight and I haven't thrown a punch yet. And everybody's like, holy cow, and all of a sudden I get my grip. I'm like, oh, cool, all right, I eat a couple of yours, I'm good, baby, let's go. And then I keep going, and then, you know, you look at McGrath's face after a minute and a half. He's like, Jesus Christ. Now he's worn out, and then there's my style kicking in. And I go, and I get him at the end, and make it an awesome fight that's memorable. And but I had a style, I had a thought process going in there, man. I really did on every fighter. So, you know, it's just like a little side piece that you have to worry about, as well as getting the damn puck out of the zone. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And you've got to be known as the NHL's marathon man for sure. I mean, you've been in some fights that were almost 3 minutes, like a couple seconds shy of it, and that happened more than once in your career. Was that something that you envisioned in your head and knew because of the conditioning that you were doing that you could make these fights last long, do well in them, and people would fucking love it?
Yeah, like I trained for that too. And it's not like I was like the... Like, I was always, like, I was gifted because I was built as a kid. Like, I was always big.
You're a stout dude. You're a stout dude. Oh, yeah.
And I was lucky, okay? Like, I had great genes, man. And I was always just cut up and did what I had to. But that doesn't mean you're in shape. It just means you look good and you're strong. And that's fine. I knew I was always stronger than everybody. And even the bodybuilders, like, maybe I didn't put up 450 pounds or whatever. But I was that crazy strong. So when I grabbed you, I could control you. I don't care how big you were. I just had that, like, you know, whenever you're in a weird position where your body goes into crazy mode, and like, say you're in a survival, your mindset's in that survival mode where you have to, you know, get out of something. Now suddenly you have crazy strength. Well, I kind of switched that on every time I fought, and it made me like 10 times stronger. I know, again, that sounds bizarre as all hell, but I did that. And you know, it just, again, you just kind of find a way to, hold on and stay up and know where you're at when you get caught. Meaning, like, sometimes I'd be in a fight and it's a minute and a half in and I'm dying. I mean, dude, dying. But I didn't want to go down. And I remember, you know, you get caught and you see black and you're like, okay. And you wake up and you're standing and you see all the crowd and you're like, okay, I'm okay. Now I know where I'm at. Okay, I'm still in the fight. You got rocked. Stay in it. You're good. All right, start throwing punches. Let's go. Like, yeah, dude, I mean, there's a lot to it, man. And I found a way to make a style out of staying long with these big, big guys and making a cool, exciting fight at the end, because that's all it is you want it exciting so your fans are going crazy. The guy's worried about fighting you because he doesn't want to be done for the game, because after you fight for 2.5 minutes, go ahead and play the game after that. Good luck with that. You're miserable. And then people are just like, that was awesome. And you pumped your team up, so you did your job.
Yeah, man. And, you know, people always think that when you talk about intimidation that it seems bizarre, but unless you've been intimidated, it doesn't seem bizarre. Like, if you've ever had an experience where you know, I mean, I've lost street fights. I'm man enough to say it, but I stood there and took it. But there's times where I was like, oh, shit, this is about to go down. And it is a measurable thing, and it is a real thing for sure. So it's not bizarre, but it's I wish there was a barometer they could put on it where people could see. Like you said, if you want to go, let's go fight for 3 minutes. And then, yeah, what are you going to do for the rest of the game, bud?
Well, I'll tell you where the intimidation factor came in more than just a fight. Because anybody could say, no, I'm not going to go. What are you going to jump me? Go ahead. You're going to get 2, 5, and 10. I'll turtle. You catch me in the back of the head maybe and fine. But where I scared guys, you know, especially in junior and getting into it, is my hits.
Yes.
You can't avoid hits.
Yes.
Okay. You want to not fight me, okay. But when you come around that net with that head down of yours, if somebody's chasing you and you're worried about getting that, you're worried about breaking away from the guy chasing you, and you don't see me coming, and I catch you so hard because I know how to hit, I know how to lower myself. I'm not 6'4", tall, goofy, straight legged guy. No, I'm like hunched down, ready to barrel through you. Kind of like if I did it in nowadays game, I'm probably going to get suspended for 12 games.
But for then, sure, dude. You're getting toasted for 20.
Oh, big time. That's fine. And that's fine. I get it. I hurt a lot of guys back in the day, and I know that I did. But that was the game then, man.
Yeah.
And it changed really quickly. And it even changed when I was still playing. I had to adjust to a couple back check hits that I couldn't do anymore and things like that. But that's what scared guys the most. And I was able to find a role with scaring the shit out of guys, getting in there so fast because no one could hold me up anymore. And all of a sudden I come down and the guys would just get rid of the puck and spin off of my head. And all of a sudden, you know, my left winger would go down and pick the puck up and create some offense on it. And guys were just so scared of that. And, you know, because, again, it's hard to avoid that. And most guys, you're not going to hurt them in a fight. You're going to hurt them when their head's up their ass. And you hit them 100 miles an hour. And, you know, it's just – that is the scariest thing alive in hockey is getting hit, not getting beat up.
Dude, that's it's amazing. It's like you read my notes because in here I've got, you know, my favorite part of your highlight reels are your hits. Like, I'm obviously a huge fan of your fighting. But, when I got up early this morning and was watching more highlights of, you know, Cam Jansen. I was going, dude, his fucking hits were bone-crushing, dude.
Oh, man.
Bone-crushing.
You should have seen in AAA, man, and like in Bantam, what I was doing to these Canadian kids up there. And you know, because I was from Eureka, you know, I was playing AAA hockey, and we're playing in the Michigan National Hockey League, and I have to go up and play Compuware, Little Caesars, Sonny Benkamp, and these monster sponsored AAA teams that are just fucking loaded with big kids. And I'd go up there, and you know, these scouts would scout those teams, you know, like, you know, Marley's and shit with Ricky Nash on there and Pope Perry and whatever the case was. And all of a sudden, we would play them and they didn't give two shits about us. But I'd go out there and just fucking, like, I'd honestly kill these guys. I was big. I was just big and I could skate. And yeah, I needed to work on the game. I didn't know the game much because my parents didn't know the game. They loved the Blues. Loved the Blues more than anything, but we didn't know hockey. But so I'd go up there and I just knew I was able to get around fast and I was a truck and I took advantage of it. And I scored a lot of goals that way and just got noticed and, you know, got drafted to the OHL and just turned it up a notch in there. But
a little bit of a notch, I would say, in the OHL.
Oh, my God. That was the best decision I've ever made to leave my house. Yeah.
So you went and lived in a billet family then up in Canada?
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
And this is the OHL, and this is not the OHL of today by any means. I mean,
no.
268 your first year there in Pims, 211, 144, then 112 playing for the Spitfires. If anybody's interested, Fourth Line Voice has a lot of your fights on YouTube that way, and I wish that the OHL would embrace that style again. And just like I was at a game in Flint, Michigan, 2 Fridays ago, and two boys were about to go, two big boys. I think Curtis Joseph is 6'9", and Fedor Gordiev is like 6'7", and they just broke them up. I was like, God, do you not hear all these people screaming? Like, come on, man, this is. And I know they're kids, but Jesus, man, give me a break.
I know, and it's changing, and that's fine. And even now, I watch even the Blues, and you know, like even last night, Alexander Steen gets rocked, and you know, like it caused a scrum, but no one. I'm thinking, I was about to tweet this out, but I thought about it too much, kind of thing. You know, one of those tweets like I do all the damn time, and I don't do it.
Yep.
But I'm like, somebody pull somebody out of the pile and go home, please. Like, just somebody at this point, just do that. And take the penalty or whatever, but pump somebody, because that it needs to be a statement after that. And just like stuff like that, this doesn't happen often. And the game's changing, that's fine. And I love the game where it's at. I do miss that sort of passion, and I'm not the only one. A lot of people do, especially in this hard-nosed, blue-collar
city. I refuse to believe we're in the minority in that opinion.
No, just everybody else is loud, I think.
Exactly.
No, I think everybody's loud. Everybody else is loud, and that's fine too. And I do understand where they're coming from, because they don't want to see Crosby get rocked. But I kind of do. I don't want Crosby to have to go in and just be like, oh, no one's going to touch me. Yeah, I love watching you score, but I love watching you have to avoid guys trying to hit you too.
The element of danger, man, it needs to be there.
Totally does. And so I do miss that. The game has changed, but you know, when I was playing, especially in juniors, it was still the Wild Wild West for sure.
Oh, for sure it was, man. And is that hard being an American boy and going up? Was that your first time even in Canada to go up there and start living?
No, because we went up there and played tournaments. Yeah, but well, you know, I was 17, and I went up there and just lived with a family. It was an 85-year-old couple, you know, with five daughters. Unfortunately, they're all moved out. Thank God for them. But it was just, my mom and dad were so lenient. You know, I was a wild man. They had to do kind of what I wanted, because I worked my ass off and I was training, and, you know, I knew my vision. But going up there, it was a little bit of a reality check. They loved it, and they loved the attention that we, you know, I got up there, and the city embraced me right away. You know, I was always smiling, and I was loud on the ice, beating everybody up, you know, very easy. You know, I did every interview, and it was funny and entertaining, and the city they just loved it. And then my billets, you know, I became real popular, and my billets, I don't know if they could handle it. You know, the phone was ringing all the time, and you know how that goes.
Yeah.
They didn't know what the fuck to do.
Yeah.
And it was pretty funny, and but I got through it, and it was great. And those memories and that decision to go up there is honestly the best decision in my hockey career.
Well, it's crazy to think about, too, because, you know, you being a St. Louis kid and going up there, now if you think about it, the path that you guys have created, St. Louis is kind of a hotbed, but at the time that you had left, it wasn't what St. Louis is now. I mean, St. Louis had 5 kids go in the first round a couple years ago. You know, the Tkachuk boys, Logan Brown, Kunin, and Clayton Keller, all very popular and doing well in the league now. And then that class of guys like yourself and Ben Bishop and Pat Maroon and Paul Stastny and Scott Mayfield, guys who have made St. Louis, as far as America goes, I mean, you think about American hockey, you go, oh, you know, Boston, Michigan, St. Louis. I mean, it's right there.
Yeah, it is. Well, yeah, I was the first one, man.
For sure. That's crazy.
Found a way. I don't know how I did it, but I found a way to just to be noticed. And you know, it was weird. And when I was young, if you would have asked me, and it's so funny, all these people come up to me now, you know, and you told me, like, all my old teachers, you said it in class, I'm going to make it. And everybody was like, you have a 0% chance. No, you're not. And I didn't, like, honestly, I thought I never, I got to a point in my age where when I was starting to hit puberty, and I got, you know, I got confidence on the ice, where I was getting strong. And I was like, I never had a doubt in my mind, believe it or not.
Wow.
That I was going to make it. I never had a doubt in my mind. And I'm not Gretter. I'm not Gretzky scoring 300 points. No. But I just knew it, and it just I fed off that confidence, man. And I did what I had to do, and I kind of paved the path. And then all of a sudden, boom! All these kids were like, "Oh, okay, he did it. Well, I'm going to go up to Canada. Well, I'm going to do this. Well, I'm getting noticed." And you know, just put St. Louis on the map. And I feel proud of it, man.
You absolutely should.
Yeah,
I feel proud about it as just an American citizen. I mean, you guys have fucking made American hockey competitive.
Yeah, I look at my parents, and still live right next to them. Actually, it's kind of funny, and you know, they're like the original gangsters of the hockey parents, you know, my dad taking me doing this, and he just didn't know shit. We're like, okay, we're going back up to Michigan, and they, you know, we had to sell our house, and you know, it was expensive, man. It was really expensive. I almost tore the family apart because of it. So,
hats off to your parents, man. That's for sure.
Yeah, well, don't worry. They've been entertained, and now they listen to me on the radio every single day. So it's just another element of entertainment I give them. So they're doing okay. Trust me.
That's awesome, man. And I wanted to ask you, you know, when you're about, let me restart here. First off, I want to know, because it's all been documented very well that you conditioned very hard. What were you doing conditioning wise in your almost 10 years in the NHL?
Well, you always say your foot speed. So I did a lot of, you know, quickness stuff, but I worked out with Finney's martial arts here too. So there's like three different kinds of workouts that you do. You know, I had my buddy Rick Wilson, he was first round pick for the Blues in 81, I believe. He opened a gym, and I remember my dad saying, well, you've got to start working out, and you got to call Rick, and finally I did. So I kind of had a personal trainer at a young age. I had a signing bonus at the time, which helped out. I signed at 18, but before that, my dad had to pay for everything. And then I kind of created a hockey fight workout where you go in there and you do the boxing, but we just kind of transformed it into hockey fight, like more of a hockey fight reality instead of just like boxing.
Right.
Because you don't box on the ice, you fight. In your hockey fight, you grab and you pull and you balance and you do this and you switch. And you're not necessarily snapping your punches, but you just got to figure out all kinds of different angles and your balance is different and just all kinds of different shit. So we kind of transformed that boxing in that hockey fight training. I did that for 15 years with them. So that was just an added on workout I did just to take me over the edge when I'm fighting all these monsters. And of course, I'm skating every day too. So there's three different workouts. You know, your training, your weights, you know, your plyos, I'll bunch them up in one. And then you go out there on the ice, you do your thing. And then you go out and you hockey fight train for 30 to 45 minutes, which that's all you need to do because it kills you. And so, yeah, you just had those three things you kind of balance out throughout the summer.
Man, that's I love hearing that you're still doing skating drills and all that too. That's
oh god, yeah.
Well, it's always asinine to me when people talk about, you know, guys like yourself or Scott Parker. Well, these guys can't skate and all that. Like, are you fucking kidding me? Go out on the ice with these boys and watch what they're figure skaters compared to you.
Yeah, you know, for me, skating is what kept me in. You know. Yeah, my fighting went up, maybe got me there for a little bit. My skating kept me in there. So, like, I was able to skate. Now, if you want to make fun of my hands, go ahead. You know, or you want to make fun of me, you know, not be able to, you know, have eyes in the back of my head because I know the guy. Like, yeah, of course. Like, the hockey sense I needed to work on and the hands and the shot. I could always be, there's a lot of tons of people better than me with that. But skating, I was able to get to point A to point B at an NHL level. And if I wasn't able to do that, I wasn't going to stay in the league a long time at all. Because there goes my extra element, because you're not hitting guys consistently and you can't catch up to them. And the game has changed. And it was changing at the time when they implemented that 0-4 lockout and they took away the hooking and clutching, which just helped me so much. Nobody was able to hold me up. And I'm like, free reign, see you later. This D's gonzo, because no one's stopping me.
Well, I mean, 05 to 14, man, that's just in the NHL with another year in the EIHL, man. It's really remarkable, man. When you ended up going over there to Nottingham, was it not easier, but did you feel that league was more afraid of you than, say, being in the NHL down with those monsters? Because the era that you were in, there were some fucking monsters in the NHL. Not that there wasn't the EHI, but there was some, I mean, Orr and McGrattan and Keefe and, I mean, Peros, Bonvie, there was Jackman, just monsters.
Yeah, no, the NHL was, you know, but it was easier to play in the NHL. I'll tell you, when I went over and played Nottingham, though, that league was probably one of the most intense leagues ever, dude. I'm just telling you that right now.
Really?
It was, yeah. Everybody worked their ass off, man. It was.
I'd love to hear that.
Yeah, it really was. And I had a little bit of, you know, I thought it was going to be a lot easier than what it was, to be honest with you. And when I get out there, I'm like, holy cow.
Well, that's honestly what I would assume, just just yes. by guessing.
I worked my ass off over there. I mean, every shift. And, you know, we had packed house, 7,500 people just going crazy every night. Now, not every building was like that, but,
right.
you know, it was a really cool league. They took it extremely very seriously. And, you know, the Panthers have they've been around for a long time. So they have a tradition of winning. And if you don't win, you know, you're losing money. And it just everything kind of catches up to you quick. So people took it serious over there, and jobs were on the line, and this and that. And I loved it. And the fans really wanted to win, and it was that big of a deal. So it was an intense league, and I embraced that. And a lot of guys don't when they go over there, I guess, sometimes. These ex-NHL guys will go over there and be like, holy cow, these guys are really in your face, you know?
Yeah.
But it was fun, and I'm glad I retired when I did, because, I probably would have fought 25 times that next year, and who knows what would have happened.
Well, I always think about how, like, popular boxing is over there, and I would figure guys like, you know, Adam Keefe and Fitzpatrick and guys like yourself who end up going there, even McGranton, you know, went over there for a year.
Belak, yeah.
I mean, how couldn't they embrace you guys? It's like, you're getting hockey and you're getting your national sport, which, I mean, soccer, boxing, but yeah. It always makes me happy when you guys go over there and do very well.
Oh, man, I'll tell you this. If I wanted to go over there and announce that I was going over there and doing an autograph signing, I'd probably make a couple hundred grand. I mean, put it that way. I don't mean to be like that, but that's how much they loved it.
Right.
And honestly, like, I would, you know, not show, but like, so when I first got there, one of the coaches, they did like a ceremonial game for one of our coaches who's been coaching there for 10 years, won a bunch of championships, named Corey Nielsen. And they asked me if, you know, packed house, and we had a day off, the whole league had a day off, so all these guys around the league came in, and we kind of scrimmaged each other and made like a ceremonial game for a guy that's won championships, whatever the case. So first couple of weeks that went down, they asked me to, so I'm pretty new there, you know, still like getting to know everything, asked me to dress up as Hulk Hogan and skate on the ice and do like a little strip, rip my shirt off in front of everybody, and do a little dance and center ice in front of all these people I just don't know. I still didn't know my teammates or anything like that, so I'm like, oh, fuck, all right, okay, give me some beer.
Yeah.
And I went out there like shit like that. Like, they asked me to fucking dress up like Hulk Hogan, rip my goddamn shirt off, and fucking dance in front of everybody. And I'm like, yeah, I'll do that for you. So it's pretty, like, that kind of shit. And they're just like, who the fuck is this? This kid, he's not supposed to do that. I did it. And I loved it. And I look back on it, and I'm like, yeah, no wonder they tweet at me every fucking day wanting me to come back.
Well fuck because, yeah. And yeah. Those guys love you. And I've had, you know, people that, you know, write for the EIHL and, you know, All Beard No Teeth runs a big popular site for Ireland over there on. And besides playing like NHL 94, 97, until you guys started going over there, there was no connection to the NHL. So you really, as much as people don't want to say enforcers made, you know, hockey more popular, you absolutely did, man. You broadened the game, and that's, at the end of the day, dude, hockey owes you a tilt to the hat, man.
Yeah, and actually there was they don't owe me a damn thing, but I get what you're saying with that, and I'll tell you, there's a kid that got drafted by Arizona from Sheffield. I forget his name, but great little player, and he got drafted by Phoenix. I'm sorry, Arizona, and first one ever. And so you can see like that happened. That same,
it's working, man.
Thing. Yeah, it happened in St. Louis, and now it's going happening over there because of all of us going over there and showing off and doing our thing. And it's just cool to see. We want hockey to be as big as possible,
fuck,
and
yeah.
That's why right now in St. Louis, the Blues are struggling so bad.
What's going on there?
Oh, fuck.
What the fuck is going on there? They should be so goddamn good. I know we don't have all day, but Jesus Christ.
No, we don't have. Look, you think, trust me, this is what ages me every single day, these questions. Because we don't know. We don't, you can't just, here's what I've noticed so far, being in a game for a couple of years. And when I mean the game, I mean the radio game and the watching a specific team and break them down kind of game. It's so much easier to dissect a game and be funny and witty and entertaining when they win. I could go out and tell you exactly why they won that game. Well, look, they're stopping on pucks. Oh, look at this great breakout. Look at their system here. Well, their power play did this. When you're like, why did Petrangelo leave Patrick Laine in front of the net with nobody around him three times in a row? I don't know.
No one fucking knows.
Do you think Coach Berube goes in there and said, here's what our game plan is going to be as far as our defensive structure is concerned. I want everybody in one corner and at least leave the best player in the world sitting in front of us. No, he did not draw that up. So you're asking me why Petro did that? I don't know. Okay? I don't know. And it's fucking hard. Well, they want to know. I don't know because that's such a boneheaded play, and I don't mean to pick on Petro. He's a friend of mine. But
He's great, but there's something. There's fucking something.
It's in their head, and it's weird, and that's the worst kind.
Yeah, that's what it is, man. It's something really weird, like, mentally.
It is. It's fucking breakdowns. Now, they played great against Colorado last night, fine, but the breakdowns are just like, whoa! And they're not young kids doing it. It's kids, veterans like Petro and Pareko and guys like that. So, again, I don't want to be negative, because I'm too negative on them anyway, but, they're my life right now.
And Pareko's breaking my heart this year, but and we'll move on past the Blues because they get shit on enough by everybody.
I know. And it directly affects the way we're, but my point is in the whole thing, like, the worst they do, like, it directly affects me and my job and the relevance of hockey in the city. And if we're not talking hockey anymore because the Blues are out in fucking early December, then I'm not as relevant. I can always be entertained. People are going to listen because it's the entertainment part. I do cool shit around town. But I want people to be engaged because they're excited about the Blues
fucking
and
A.
me talking about it.
Yeah.
And right now, it's not the fucking case. It sucks.
Yeah, man. And last thing I had to say about the Blues, when you fucking put them on paper, and I know you don't play hockey on paper, but through the lines, all the way down through the roster, you would go, okay, they're better there, line one. They're there, better, line two. Top D pair, they're better there. And it's just, there's something fucking weird going on with them, man. Something weird. And, you fire the coach, whatever you got, and it's just, there's something weird going on.
It is, and it's hard to put your thumb on it. It's hard to really pinpoint one thing because it's a bunch of things. But all I ask them to do, honestly, is entertain. If you're not going to win, don't win and get booed off the fucking ice because you didn't bring any emotion to the table. Because the people that live out by me that are like breaking concrete all day long and they love hockey so much, but they want to take their kids there, they don't want to take their kids there. And all of a sudden you're getting smoked for nothing by the worst, whatever, and you don't show any emotion after you lose, they're not going to come anymore. And I see that on a daily basis.
Dude.
And they're so mad because of the just like the emotional part of the game. There's ways to lose games, but they're losing them the really, really bad way.
Well,
where it's like degrading.
Yeah, it's kind of, St. Louis is kind of that Philly mentality. I mean, I've had my good friend from down that area, Chris Banity, who's a lifelong Blues fan, and now he's like, I don't know how to fucking watch this team. You said, they're losing, but they're not losing, and they're not doing anything. They're not even trying to like make it like aggressive, or that Blues style that needs to be there, man.
I know that's been embedded in Blues history throughout its long history. Yeah, we haven't won, but we've always had that like we're going to be hard to play against mentality. I mean, even back when Bobby Plager, who I just absolutely adore beyond belief. I don't know if you know who Bobby Plager is, but you probably should. He played for the Blues. He's one of the most known, renowned Blues got people in history, did it all, worked in every, anyway, went to three, Stanley Cups and back in 67 when they first, came to St. Louis, but, from him and his brothers to all the way through the 80s, to, Sutters to Kelly Chase and Twister up to, me and Reaver and, just there's always that F you in your face, you're going to come down here, we're going to go you, we're going to have a tough team, hard place to play against, blue collared, and we kind of got away from that a little bit, and people are kind of confused, and they don't like it.
Yeah, it's that thing, man, they got to do something. Here's what I suggest, you get fucking Cam Jansen out of retirement, you get that dude in some skates, and let's start the fucking show.
Yeah, well, I do skate still, don't get me wrong. And I got my own little thing going. I got a bunch of guys I got together, a bunch of hockey guys around St. Louis. So we're all good friends, and we all skate against each other. We all text each other on a big text line and make fun of each other. And it's pretty cool. We help each other out with business and things like that. So I got all the hockey community together, and we help each other with events and whatnot. So I got a cool thing going. But yeah, if I went out there, it's funny. It's easy to think that way, but they'd walk me like a pylon, man. I'm
at you. So you got kind of a mobile locker room.
Yeah, I do, and it's great, man.
That's good, man.
All the hockey guys, we all take care of each other, and you know, we all support each other, and we all love the game, and everybody's fun. All these guys, they're all fun because they all know, you know, hockey is like being in a locker room and talking, like, oh, you know, you see the game, and we all chirp each other during the game and stuff like that. It helps me actually with my radio show to hear what other people's thoughts that I trust and that I know the game and what they have to say throughout the game. And I kind of go back on the text line and kind of read up on it. Like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. This feeds you more information, too, when you have to dissect all these damn games.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. There's a moment in one of your games where I wanted to talk to you about, you know, going back to intimidation. It's a Devils versus the New York Rangers, and you know, one of your favorite guys, Sean Avery, there runs Brodeur, and you're on the bench, and you scoot yourself down there and look at Hank and go, "You're fucking next, dude." Like, if he's gonna do it, could you see the fear in his eyes? Like, because it doesn't translate, but I know you could see him, and it looks to me that he's getting kind of worried that something's gonna happen. Like, That's the shit that's missing, man. Those storylines like that, man.
I'll tell you this. He wasn't scared at all.
No, he wasn't, Hank?
Not at all. What am I going to do, run him? I mean, seriously. You know what happened after that? And yeah, I had to do that, and I was a kid. And yeah, I'm going to kill you, Hank. Hank's looking at me like, shut your stupid mouth. And I wasn't. I mean, what am I going to do, run him? But what I did do was I fought Colt Knorr after that, and he caught me with a left, and I looked like a fool. Oof. So yeah, I just... The more you talk like that and you yell and scream, I feel like sometimes hockey karma bites you in the ass, and that's kind of what happened to me in that game. And, you know, and Avery did that all the time. That was his game, what he did, and they made a new rule out of it and stuff like that, or whatever the case was. But, yeah, I didn't do shit to Henry Lundqvist, and Henry Lundqvist was definitely not scared of me at the time. But he's not, you know, I'm not dumping a puck into his corner and running him. What's he scared of? Me shooting a puck at him? That's sure as hell not going to happen either.
He's going, kid, you're not Bob Probert. What the fuck are you talking about?
He's like, at the time, I'm worried about Brian Gianta scoring on me. I'm not worried about you. Like, who are you kidding? You know?
Well, it's crazy to think, and I mean, you, like you said, you grew up when, or you were playing when YouTube was happening. So, I mean, that's a clip that lives on forever. It's on the beginning of a few of your highlight reels just because of how awesome it looks. I mean, it really does. It looks like it's lead up to you going out and, like, Stone Cold stunning his ass, man.
I probably got a 20-gamer for the Stone Cold stunner. I would have sliced him right in the nuts. But, yeah, no, look, that's just part of it. And Avery pissing everybody off. And I tried to jump him, I think, that game, but Colton got me and – you know, it's just he knew what he was doing with all that shit. And
Avery knew he had Colton on there too.
Oh fuck yeah! Oh god, he's not fighting me, man. I tried. Hell no. I begged him, and then I jumped him in preseason one time and pumped him in the back of his head a couple times. But that's the closest I've ever gotten to Sean Avery.
I got a few more fun ones here for you, bud. If that's all right.
Yeah.
Now, when you got traded from New Jersey to St. Louis, how excited were you?
Oh God! I mean, it was a weird year because it's kind of weird. I hurt my shoulder.
Right, fighting you, Riley, right?
Yeah, it was, who the hell? Maybe it was Peros. My shoulder, I ripped it out a couple times the year before that. And I remember going in. And I remember like being on my boat, and I remember kind of slipping on it, and kind of my shoulder sublocks a little bit. And I'm like, oh fuck! I'm like, I'm okay, and it felt fine. The first preseason game, I go in, I fought Jesse Bullery, and I'm so dumb. And I fought him, and it wasn't that great of a fight, and I felt my shoulder just kind of, it's a little tweak. And I'm like, ah. But I was so pissed that the fight wasn't great. So I challenged him again the next year when we got out of the box, and we started trading, and I threw my shoulder out. Oh. And it just wasn't there. And I fucking knew it, and I should have just sucked it up, got it checked, and it wouldn't have been that much of a disaster. But I ripped it out. It was fucking torn, you know. So I went down to James Andrews, got it sealed up, fixed. And then, so I'm just like, just pain in the ass. I've really never been hurt before like that. So it's just a long, long year. And they had Asham at the time, and they just didn't need me. Lou did me a favor. And yeah, they got Bryce Salvador in the time. Salvador was leaving St. Louis anyway, so it made sense. And John Davidson took over in St. Louis, and they needed to be entertaining. And, you know, the ticket sales were really bad for the past couple of years in St. Louis. We just got Oshie and Eric Johnson and Petro, whatever the case was, and they needed some more excitement, so they got the hometown kid coming back, and JD did me a big favor by trading for me. And that, when I came home, you felt like you're on top of the world, man. I mean, you really do. Because even in St. Louis, when I was playing for the Devils, people still didn't understand what was going on, because it's hard to – nobody was Devils fans.
Right.
St. Louis is weird. Like, they know the Blues, but I don't think at the time they didn't necessarily know outside of the Blues that much. But once I got traded here, then it's like, oh, everybody, you know, in the whole town supported you and loved it and followed you and just blew up. And they just made me do so many different charity stuff around the town. And I did it all. And I look back at it now, like, I helped out my career after hockey so much just by doing everything I was supposed to do, charity, this, signings, whatever. I was everywhere at all times. And now I just know so many people in this town because of that stuff that I didn't realize it was helping me at the time, but I just did it anyway. And I look back and I'm like, wow, that got me over the hump after hockey, because now I have all these relationships with all these people that I just forgot about, you know, in the business world just because of all these different things. And it's all coming to fruition now. It's great.
Hell yeah, man. What is your favorite part of St. Louis, New Jersey, and Nottingham?
Well, St. Louis, I have so many different favorite parts that have nothing to do with hockey. I love the Lake of Ozarks. I grew up down there. You know, this lake, and I love boats. And, you know, I love going to the gas station in St. Louis, and you know, for the most part, I like have people come up to me and say, hey, now when I'm in a pissy-ass mood, I know how to sneak away from all that stuff. And, you know, just because I just don't feel like talking, which is pretty – it's a rare thing. But I love to have that. I love to – go places with your friends, and everybody knows who you are. It's a cool feeling, man.
I
love that. I love Jersey because of the food, and the fans there were awesome, and they treated me great.
What's the food you like in Jersey?
Oh, fuck, dude. Look at the food. In St. Louis, there's a fast food place every mile. Every mile, fast food place. In Jersey, there's hardly any fast food places because – or there's hardly any Subways or anything like that because every deli is so good.
Right.
It's so old school, like recipes from your grandfather that came over here, and just they put so much love and effort into their food over there. It's so competitive to where you open up a restaurant, you better be fucking solid.
Yeah, it better be good, right?
So I miss that, man. And I miss going to New York City in the holidays and shit like that. And then Nottingham, I love playing. The hockey over there was great because I played. That was a big part of, you know, these games. And sometimes you only have three lines because you can't call people up. So I get like 20 minutes a night. So that part was awesome. The fans, obviously. And I love European history. I love castles.
Oh, yeah, man.
Love it, man. I watch shit on castles. Remember I was talking about tornadoes?
Yeah.
Well, I love medieval history. And I love kings back in the day and how they did their shit and living in these big-ass castles on a big hill looking over a town. I just love that. And Nottingham was just me and my fiancé got our castle king fix over there, you know, going to all these castles and shit. Like, it just was so fucking cool traveling from Nottingham up to, like, Fife, Scotland, and then looking over and being like, whoa, what the fuck castle is that? Looking over and just seeing this beautiful castle on a hill. You look it up on your phone, and you're like, holy shit. Because back in, you know, you're traveling in the U.S. when you're in the minors and on the bus, and you're going from, like, Binghamton to Springfield, Massachusetts, you're like, oh, yay.
Cool.
Although it is pretty in the fall, but you get my drift on that. It just was a cool experience because I just love the historical aspect of it.
When you actually have time in Nottingham, too, because the games are on the weekends, right?
Yeah, we had time, and you could walk everywhere. I walked to the rink. It was cool. But, no, we played a shit ton of games, man. Like, I think they were all – I guess we had some Thursday games, too. But, yeah, it was like playing in the minors. or you're playing on the weekends, don't get me wrong. So we did have a lot of time, but we did play a lot of games, though. I think we played like 68 games.
Yeah, I think that it's like somewhere upwards of 60 games, but it's just far more spread out.
Yeah, it is, but you're still busy. But on the other hand, yeah, I mean, I walk around town and just Nottingham's so pretty, and especially in the holidays, they have like this market square where they just, it just looks like you're going back in time to the Middle Ages. And
hell yeah.
I just love that shit. I know I sound corny right now. But
hell no, you don't, man. Fucking hell no. My least favorite part of, I toured in a heavy metal band for a few years. And the worst part of it was you never had any time. So, like, Baltimore looked the same as San Francisco as Boston did because you're there at the venue, like, hanging out, like,
you're
in a band.
You're in a heavy metal band, eh? Because I love metal.
Artillery Breath, dude. Look it up. I guarantee you'll like it.
Yeah, I like Lamb of God and, you know, obviously Pantera. You know, I like...
If you like both of those, I'll send you a link, dude. You'll fucking love it. You'll love my band, dude.
Well, when I'm reincarnated, I want to be a lead singer in a metal band. I don't know if you noticed that or not. No, I told you that or not, but there's another little fun fact for you.
Hell yeah, man.
I love it, man. It's that same feel, man. Like, when you're on the ice and you get to a good scrap and everybody's like, like that euphoric high you get. It's the same thing when you go on stage and you're the lead singer and you just walk up on stage and you look out in the crowd and everybody's just fixated on you and you're just like, yeah, I'm gonna fucking entertain you.
It's a feeling I constantly chase. I feel like that being in front of hundreds of people, you know, because I sing in the band and I that was my job. I didn't play the guitar, so I had to play the crowd.
Yeah, and that's what I don't want to. I like bands that the lead singer is the lead singer.
That was my
like,
job.
Bowl for My Valentine, they have a guitar in their hand. I like lead singers that could run around and they control the crowd and. Just like Phil Anselmo did with Pantera, man. Like,
yeah,
just,
the best.
Yeah, lead singers, they. If you don't have a great lead singer that controls the crowd, then you better go find one because you're not going anywhere.
And I was fortunate enough that the dudes behind me were so talented that I felt like I had to go that extreme mile more because I, you know, to match them. So it does work that way. So I'm sure Phil was like, shit, look at Dimebag, I better go hard.
Oh yeah, he's out of his fucking mind. But yeah, no, they did it right, man. So I appreciate that. So there you go.
Hell yeah, so, man. Hell yeah. Hey, have you ever heard of these Cam Jansen mystery books?
Oh fuck yeah. I know. There's only one S. I know me and that little redheaded girl look alike.
Yeah, funny, I want is somebody to just Photoshop your face over that little redheaded girl for all those books, dude.
You should do that and throw it on Twitter. I'll probably get a lot of likes. And I'm going to pump up your new book you have coming out, Cam Jansen and the History of the Flower Girl, or whatever the hell it is. So
like Cam Jansen's first day of school mystery.
Yay! Dude, honestly, find the corniest picture and then put my head on it, my face on it, and put that bad boy on Twitter.
I'm going to, for sure, man. I'm going to, for sure.
That's great, dude. That's great.
We talked a little bit about fighting tonight or today, and there's a pretty big fight tonight. The WBC American champion, Deontay Wilder, is fighting Tyson Fury, the Gypsy King. And this is the best boxing match to come in, I don't know, in my life that I can think of. Two undefeated big guys, the heavyweights. Who do you got?
I don't know enough about it, but I would say that Tyson Fury is hard to deal with because of his size. And I saw their press conference, and you know, Wilder might be his, you know, his name says it all. I guess pretty wild, but yeah, I mean, you know, Tyson Fury is kind of a goofy looking bastard. I mean, he's a big boy.
He moves sloppy, well for a big dude.
He's sloppy. He's just got a sloppy looking body. You know, he's just kind of like. But the dude throws quick, man. He throws hard, and he's big. You know, he went through some shit, too. Like,
he beat Klitschko.
He fucked up. Well, yeah,
he beat Klitschko.
And then he got so popular so fast.
Cocaine.
And then he just started partying. And people, you know, because you know, all those boxes are kind of loudmouths.
Yeah.
For the most part. Not that Anthony Joshua too much, but he got into some shit, and... And he crawled out of it, man. And you know, I kind of respect him for that.
I like that too, but I thought Wilder had a good point, because if Wilder had done the same thing, people would just call Wilder a drug addict. They wouldn't
maybe,
be, you know?
Maybe not, though.
You're right.
Maybe not. I don't know. It depends on how you – it just depends. Like, even John Jones, I think if he comes out, like, I know he gets – but I think if he came out like, look, I have a problem.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Look, I fucked up. I got a problem.
John Jones got a problem.
I got a fucking problem, and I have a demon, and I'm working on it, and I don't want to apologize. Like, it just depends on how you play it, too. People want to cheer for you, man. People want – it's funny how Americans, they like to see you crash, but they also support you when you come back.
Everyone loves a comeback.
They do. Look at Tiger Woods. Look at – I mean, just – fuck, they want people wanting to kill Tiger. They didn't want to fucking kill him and hate them and just stand – and now they just love them again. And it's just so it's just how you react to it, and it's how you present yourself afterwards. And you have to be genuine, man. Like, fuck, I have a fucking problem.
And he was straight up like that. He said, "Listen, I'm mentally ill. I tried to kill myself. I had a drug problem, and now I've got my head on straight." So I think that honesty is really the biggest part of it.
Yeah. Yes, man. Just like, admit to your faults. Like, I'm very self-deprecating on my show. Like, and it's such an easy thing to do. Like, I fuck it. It's so easy. Everybody pumps your tires up as it is.
Yeah.
So when you're self-deprecating, like, you're just real. And, you know, some people try to be that way, and they're like, no, you're not coming off. I don't believe you. But when I do it, I'm pretty sincere with it, because it's fucking true.
You're genuine as fuck, man.
It's people, like, they love that. They love hearing that side of you, man. And that, so it's just, again... You know, everybody wants a comeback story. So, I'm rooting for that Fury, man. I just hope it's a good tilt. That's all. I'll be watching it after I get done with this. I got another event tonight I got to go to.
Cam, it better be a fucking good tilt. I'm spending $80 on this fucking thing. It better be pretty good. That's what. That's all I'm saying.
80 bones on that bad boy. Yeah, my buddy's going to buy it.
I've got buddies coming, my brother and his friends, so I'm not paying all 80, but, like, they're making it impossible for me to enjoy anything, man.
Yeah, it is kind of goofy.
That's insane.
Well, UFC, I think, just signed with ESPN, so they're not going to be doing the pay-per-view shit anyway.
No, it's going to be, you have to download an app to watch the fight nights now, like the Saturday night free fights that I pay fucking DirecTV for. I can't get those for free anymore.
I know, man.
Anyway, you're getting fucking the ring around, dude.
Yeah, that's what they do, man. That's what they do. But just entertain me. That's all I ask. It's like the blues.
Cam!
If I can win, just entertain me, will you?
Cam Bam Bam Jansen, dude. Thank you so much for your fucking time, dude. This was an incredible, incredible time, dude. I really appreciate you, man.
No problem, man. Anytime, brother. Anytime.
Hey, and I'll tell you what. Wilder better win just for America, dude.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. You gotta root for the Americans. Don't. I love my country through and through. I absolutely do.
Absolutely.
And, oh fuck yeah! I wouldn't want to live. I've lived everywhere. Not everywhere, but I've lived in some. You know, maybe Canada. We have the best thing going here. We absolutely do. Yeah, we're fucked up here and there. Don't get me wrong, but I love my country. And so if anybody from the U.S., I'm definitely gonna root for him, unless he's a D-bag. And I don't think he is. So. That's my only reasoning not to.
And from, you know, all my fellow American hockey fans, do we thank you and the rest of the St. Louis guys for, you know, pushing the sport and making America competitive. You know, I thank you for the Cam Jansen show and the career you had and putting yourself on the line, man. We really appreciate it. You know, being a fan, that's what I admire and look up to, is the guys that, you know, not only played hockey but did a little bit more. And just tell the Biscuit Babies, the listeners, where they can find you on all the social media and all that good stuff.
I'm Cam Jansen 25 on Twitter. I got Facebook. You know, just type my name in. I got a fan page you guys can like, because, you know, they got the two pages. So you got your personal page. It's already got 5,000 people on it. So go ahead and like my fan page. I post the same shit. And I'm also on Instagram, too. I believe it's all under Cam Jansen 25, so it's you'll see it on there. There's a couple fake accounts, but you'll know which ones the real ones. And then again, I'm on 5-9 a fan. You can just download the app and listen to me. I'm pretty candid on there, and I tell it how it is, and I try to be entertaining.
You absolutely do, and you are, man. You are the real. You are the real deal, man.
Appreciate it, dude. Really do.
Absolutely do. Hey, you have a good night, man. Go America.
Right on, baby. We'll see you, buddy.
Yep, see you, bud.